Welcome to This Time Next Year's virtual summit brought to you today by the Public Speakers Association. I'm so excited to introduce to you the amazing Ms. Rosemarie Barnes. Rosemarie, take it from here.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for that introduction. I'm a public speaker. I speak very well all the time. Tanya, thank you for the introduction. When we think about where we're going to be next year, it's very good to think about where we were last year and consider all the changes that have already taken place. How many business hats do you wear in a single day? Are you a parent? Are you someone's child, an adult, a person of business, a planner, a home care specialist? Now think about how many different roles or different hats you wear over the course of a whole month, a year, a lifetime. How many times have you found it necessary to change your point of view or are obliged to consider new or different alternatives to a problem? See, with new information or in new situations, our opinions and thought processes change and develop. It's all part of life. Human beings are in a constant state of reinvention. We go from infant to child to adult to parent and so on. And at each stage, we change our behaviors and our beliefs. The confidence we have in moving ourselves from one stage to another can be responsible for our success or our failure. Change happens. And good or bad, it's always an adventure. Sometimes we're prepared and have actually created the change. Sometimes, though, it happens to us instead of because of us. What can we do when we find ourselves somewhere we'd rather not be, doing something we'd rather not do? We can be excellent in every situation we find ourselves in, and we can plan and prepare for something better. A million years ago, at the dawn of time, when I was young, I had just married, I had finished university with the first degree, and I was ready. Life was before me, and I couldn't find a job. When you have a degree in theater, drama, and acting, and there's no money for funds for arts and arts education and performances because the economy is in the tank, you need to find a job. I took a position as a receptionist at Canada's first correspondence university. It was horrible. I was bored to tears. There was nothing to do. They were staffing up for future development, and I spent months sitting at a desk trying to look busy, and then I gave that up and decided that, well, forget that. I'll just read a book. But even that wasn't working. So two things happen to me when I get bored. Either I get naughty, and I didn't think that was such a great idea, or I look for ways to amuse myself. So I just started asking the people around me who were busy, 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 if I could help. Big eyes noticed, and eventually over the course of time, I developed a purchasing department for the university and became the purchasing manager. I had to reinvent what I was doing. I had never been in the world of purchasing. So, all right, but that's the place I found myself. And so I reinvented what I needed to do in order to be successful there. And that in turn led to opening so many other doors. I didn't do it myself. We always need someone to help us along the way, to help reinvent ourselves. I had a mentor. I didn't know I had a mentor. It was far too early in my development to know I needed such things. But this man saw potential in me, and he helped guide me through. Were it not for him, I might still be rattling around wondering what to do with myself, sitting at a reception desk when no one came in the front door. The vital first step in the preparation, though, to get ready for the reinvention is to consider how well we know ourselves, how confident we are with our values. You see, it didn't matter if I was behind a reception desk or whether I was in front of 1,000 people acting on stage or conducting music or singing. It all comes down to who am I? What do I know about myself? How much do I believe in myself? What exactly do I believe in, and to what lengths will I go to defend those beliefs? Those are our values. When we know who we are, it doesn't matter what situation we find ourselves in, those values will guide us. Now, my parents are on their way to 90 years old, and to this day, they believe and model respect for all living things. Everything and everyone has importance and merits respect. Once, when we were slaughtering chickens on the farm, I watched my dad pet and stroke and gently thank every last chicken as one by one he took them to the chopping block. Every worm in the soil, every grain in the fields, every single person they have ever encountered has been treated kindly and respectfully. They value life in all its forms. Mom and Dad taught these values to me, and I, in turn, passed them on to my children. Now, not all influences that create your values have to be positive. Sometimes the negative ones give our values a really good shake-up, and it doesn't matter whether you're young, old, or anywhere in between. Miss Sparrow was at least 150 years old when she was my teacher. She had her own way of teaching grade 2 students, thank you very much, and she didn't much appreciate being told she had to participate in this newfangled acceleration system. She had 45 students in the class. 33 were regular grade 2 students, and 12 of us were the ones messing with her methods. Her solution was to focus her attention on one or the other of the two definite divisions of labor in her class. When she worked with the group of 12, the other group simply did not exist, and vice versa. She was absolute in her conviction that and nothing and no one was going to interrupt her process. It worked pretty well, except for the occasion when she was working with the regular grade 2 students and I had to go to the loo. For what seemed like an eternity, she steadfastly ignored my raised hand, and no amount of waving fingers was going to interrupt her routine. Now, by this time, I really did have a problem. I was far too afraid to do anything else to try and attract her attention, and eventually, the pressure on the bladder simply forced a solution. Even with a puddle forming under my desk and the other students making a big fuss about it, Miss Sparrow continued on, seemingly unaware of any unusual occurrence. When she finally completed her lesson with the grade 2 students, she angrily announced that she wanted to see me outside of the class. I have never before and never again been so embarrassed. Not only was there a puddle under my seat, but of course, my clothes were wet as well. Yet there didn't seem to be a choice, and red-faced and wet-bottomed, I left the room to follow her. Once outside of the room, she yelled at me. I started to cry. And then she told me that this newfangled acceleration system that I had been put into was a mistake, and that she was having to teach children too immature for the curriculum. And hadn't I just proved that with wetting myself and all, and now standing in front of her blubbering like a baby. I learned a great deal that day. The most important thing being that I would never, ever treat another human being the way she treated me. That became part of my value system. Our core values guide us. They are our safety net. In moments of trouble or crisis, they are the basis from which our decisions are made. They are part of our subconscious that never sleeps, that makes us put out an arm to protect a stranger from leaping out in front of a car. My daughter, Arielle, is a bit of an earth mother. I think she was born in the wrong era. Truth be told, she behaves a bit like a hippie from the 60s or 70s. Her family consists of herself and her husband, two beautiful daughters, a dog, two cats, and a bull snake. She used to have three budgies as well and has babysat countless critters for weeks at a time. Out of all the animals, all but one cat is a rescue animal. Right at this very moment, she is raising a crow. Said crow came to her just barely hatched. It was featherless, really ugly, and still had the imprint of the eggshell on its skin when Ariel's two daughters found it on the ground. See, the tree holding the nest had been cut down, the nest destroyed, and the pathetic baby bird was going to die. Naturally, they brought it home to mommy, where it was immediately adopted by the whole family. To the list of permanent residents of their small home, now add 1 4-month-old crow. They named him Russell, as in Russell Crowe, and he follows them everywhere. He comes down from his perch, lights onto my daughter's shoulder, nibbles at her cheek just a minute, gives her a little kiss, and then flies off to play some more. Arielle could no more have rejected the baby bird than she could have rejected any person in need. It would have caused her enormous stress and discomfort because that decision would have run counter to her values. Even though she knew nothing about how to care for a newly hatched bird, she knew she had to try. She did have a choice to accept or reject Russell, but her values made that decision for her. Consider your value system to be a little bit like your car's GPS. When we're driving and have taken a wrong turn, ending up somewhere we didn't expect, the GPS uses a 3R system to get us back on course. It reviews where we are now. It recalculates and finds another way for us to reach our destination. And then it redirects us along a new path. In effect, it reinvents the journey. Review, recalculate, redirect in order to reinvent. The GPS doesn't yell at us for not listening or following directions. It doesn't stand on a chair and proclaim our error to the moon and stars. It quietly, calmly, and confidently shows us a new heading and we continue on our way. The GPS gets its confidence from the data it holds. We get our confidence from understanding our values. When we do reach our desired destination, our new situation, we still retain the option of choice. We can decide to take it, leave it, or change it. We can choose to take the situation as it is, work through it, accept it. We can leave it, refuse involvement in it, remove ourselves from the situation, or we can choose to change it, adapt the parameters, realign the focus, alter the methods. This is called the TLC principle, which brilliantly serves as a template from which decisions and actions can be chosen. Even though at times it may not feel like it, we always have the power to take it, leave it, or change it. To be perfectly confident, we must have absolute trust that our value systems will stand the test of time. And to painlessly reinvent ourselves, we must know what lines we will absolutely not cross. Of course, our value systems are only one part of the equation. When we look around us, we see people with a wide variety of confidence levels. Some people seem to have so little, while others positively glow with confidence. Why are some people so fearless and willing to take chances, while others are so afraid of failure that they don't even bother to try anything new or different? In times of great irritation, we might say, "I've tried everything." But much of the time, we've really just recycled the same old strategies we've always used. When our usual systems don't work, we become agitated, angry, frustrated. We don't like having to try something else. It takes more energy and effort, and besides, our tried and true methods always work before, right? No, we are none too fond of change. Yet when we think about it, the only thing that is actually constant, the only consistent thing we can absolutely trust to be true, is that everything will change, and we will have to change with them. We will be called upon to reinvent ourselves and our situations over and over again. So what is it that allows some people to adapt to change easier than others? The answer is confidence. It turns out that one of the secrets to becoming confident is not about having the right answer or always being successful. In actual fact, becoming confident is more about being willing to learn and try new things. Peter T. McIntyre said it brilliantly. He said, "Confidence comes not from always being right, but from not fearing to be wrong." I believe that success does not father confidence. It fathers complacency. Confidence is born out of navigating through failure. Confidence is born out of navigating through failure. There are many of us that are so afraid of being wrong, so lacking in self-confidence, that we would rather live in comfortable misery than try and reinvent ourselves or our situation. How do we become confident enough to either follow our plan or create a new one when it is right to do so? When do we begin to understand that difficulties and mistakes along the way should not be feared, but instead be embraced as opportunities for learning, for improving self-confidence, for discovering that we take our values with us no matter how often a reinvention of ourselves or our situation is necessary? When reinvention and change can or must happen, it is helpful to understand this. Everything is temporary. Whether for good or bad, reinventions are and will be necessary over and over and over again as our situations change. And to survive and thrive, it's best to be the one in the driver's seat. Is it not more comfortable to create than react? To drive the vehicle than scurry to try and get out of its way? The trick is to successfully navigate our continually changing landscape. And the trick to doing that is to gracefully acknowledge that every change is necessary for right now, and that the change will change again. In doing that, we make our decisions to create, accept, reject, or adapt to the new decision. And it's so much easier when we use our value system as a guide and the knowledge that everything is temporary. When I was teaching school, a lot of my grade 12 students would come to me in a panic because they were having to enroll in secondary, post-secondary education, and they were overwhelmed by having to decide what they were going to do for the rest of their lives. Each and every one of them sighed with huge relief as I told them over and over again, you are not deciding what to do with the rest of your life. You are deciding what to do for the next 4 years if you're going to university. For the next X number of years for whatever post-secondary classes you're going to take. And then after that, you're going to have to decide on something else again. Which job do you want to take? Which path is right for you? Will you get married? Will you stay single? Will you move continents? Everything is temporary and can be undone, except, of course, for the very worst situations where we've really made a mistake. But even that can change. The trick is to excel and offer excellence and positivity along every turn you make along your path. Soon enough, another change will manifest, requiring us to travel over another interesting journey, take another positive action, and create yet another opportunity for reinvention. Over the coming year, and right now as you're considering where you will be this time next year, consider every opportunity as an adventure and face each of them secure in the knowledge that we have the power to use the TLC principle to take, leave, or change every situation and our internal GPS system to review, recalculate, and redirect us through all of them with poise, grace, and above all, with confidence. I'd like to end with a quote written by Lupitha Herman. And it's written for she's, but it applies just as well to all the he's. It says, one day she finally grasped that unexpected things were always going to happen in life. She realized that the only control she had was how she chose to handle them. So she made the decision to survive using courage, humor, and grace. She was the queen of her own life, and the choice was hers. My name is Rosemary Barnes. I'm the Maverick Voice at Confident Stages, and it has been my pleasure to speak with you today.